Hey everyone, I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. I have a great program for you today. Now, teens these days are stressed out. They're feeling isolated. They're sleep deprived and they're overcommitted. And one of the biggest stressors for teens and their parents is preserving their relationship while navigating a competitive academic environment. My guests today are Cynthia Muchnick and Jen Curtis, co-authors of the new book called The Parent Compass. And The Parent Compass provides guidance on what parents' roles should be in supporting their teens' mental health and at the same time trying to keep the relationship with their teens intact. Cynthia Muchnick is a graduate at Stanford University and has been working in education for the past 25 plus years as a former assistant director of college admission, high school teacher, educational consultant, and author of five other education-related books. Jen Curtis has an MSW from USC. She is owner of Future Wise Consulting and has been an educational consultant and professional speaker for the past 12 years. For more information about Cindy, Jen, or their new book, please go to parentcompassbook.com. So welcome to the program, Cindy and Jen. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, welcome. And it's such a pleasure talking to both of you. And I'm looking forward to talking to you, especially about your new book called The Parent Compass. So tell the audience, tell listeners, what motivated you to write this book? And what does the title Parent Compass really signify or mean?
About 2 years ago, almost exactly, Operation Varsity Blues, which is also known as the college admissions scandal, erupted in our nation. And Cindy and I, as educational consultants, had been colleagues for years and, you know, had always kind of bounced things off of one another. And so given our relationship, we called each other that day just in shock watching what was unfolding in the national media in front of us. And that phone call led to some very potent conversations over the ensuing weeks when we really started to look at what we were seeing go on around us in terms of parenting behavior. While what we were seeing did not amount to anything like fraud and bribery, we were seeing overstepping and parents who were over-tutoring their kids and over-scheduling. And we were seeing kids who were coming in who were voiceless and who were burned out and stressed out and, you know, just frankly didn't have time to learn for learning's sake. And we were really troubled. So we wanted to come up with a way to sort of help remedy the situation that we were seeing. And so we called on teachers and deans and administrators and educational thought leaders to come up with what we look as kind of a toolkit of strategies that will help parents preserve a harmonious relationship with their teen and where they can raise their teens in such a way and using such parenting behaviors that will help their kids thrive, particularly in this hyper-competitive academic environment that we're seeing.
So the book is really not focused on how to get your child into a college or the best college, correct? But it focused on well-being and preserving the relationship with your child. And when we're talking about children, by the way, we're talking about tweens and teens, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is not meant to be. It's the farthest thing from a how to get into college book. That's not what our goal was here. It really was to really provide an etiquette book, a behavior book for parents, and using examples from families we'd seen in our own practices, students who appeared to thrive and were happy and could self-advocate and seemed to enjoy learning versus kids who seemed burnt out, and how the parenting that they may have had at home, or that we sometimes would see creep into our offices, how it may have impacted that behavior. And so we took our own observations and then we coupled them with the science and the research that was out there from, you know, other authors and thought leaders that we respected. And we did a lot of surveying and we really pulled it all together into one place. What we've heard from lots of our readers is that it's kind of a book that you can, even though it took us a long time to write, you can really read it in a weekend and it can change your life starting the minute you're done. It's just, it really can, you can put these ideas into practice right away, very quickly. They're tangible. They're easy to follow and understand. You just have to commit to them.
I love that, especially being a scientist. I love that you have science-based strategies and guidance and advice, but also that you've translated it, as you just said, into information and guidance, advice that's accessible and easy to understand and include. Now, one of the things you argue is that as parents, I myself am a parent as well, that we need to take a walk down memory lane. Tell us more about what you mean by that and why it's important for us as parents to self-reflect a little bit before parenting.
Interestingly enough, so this chapter that you're referring to, the take a walk down memory lane chapter, comes at the beginning of the book. But funny enough, Cindy and I wrote it really toward the end of our writing process. And what happened was we had offered all these tools and strategies that we were so excited about and we felt were so accessible. But we realized that there was a bit of a chasm, and that was that before parents could employ these strategies, they really needed to look at themselves. They needed to kind of take an inventory of how they had grown up, how academics were treated in their home, and what their own fears and their own, you know, maybe their own treatment of failure is in their own lives. And they needed to see how that was impacting parenting. We sort of took on this idea of physician heal thyself, which is before you can help someone else, you need to make sure that you are in a good place. So that particular chapter now comes at the very beginning, and it asks parents to really self-evaluate, to realize what they are bringing to the table. And then it even gives them tangible questions to speak to their partner if they have one, speak to their kids, and really get that dialogue going to set the groundwork before they move forward with the strategies that the Parent Compass is suggesting.
So important. Can you give us one of those questions, by the way? What might be one example of a question that a parent could ask themselves or ask a partner to see about their own history and their own parenting experiences?
Sure. Well, the Know Yourself Parent Questionnaire is on page 32 and 33 and 34 of the book. And really, some of the questions involve something as simple as, what is your personal birth order? Are you the first, middle, or last, or only child in your family? How were academics treated in your home when you were growing up? How do you describe your own personality of what you were like in high school? Were you socially connected? Were you kind of nerdy? Were you in the cool, popular group? Were you a leader? Were you a follower? And it's really almost like a personality, but academic and family-oriented kind of quiz or questionnaire. And just following that is the teen questionnaire that asks the teens their own kinds of questions. And Jen and I use these. We practice them on lots of families and asked people to try them out. And we kept hearing, in fact, I have two teens and two beyond teens myself. And so we sat down and did these questionnaires with our own kids to test them, as well as, you know, with friends and colleagues. And it just kept coming up that, you know, this was a great way to start the conversation with your kids, mm-hmm. so that you are really on the same level as them. You're not, you know, being the ruler and being the director and being the dictator, but that you're more of a consultant. You're open to improvement. You as a parent are saying, I want to do better. And in order for me to do better, let's talk about this. Let's figure mm-hmm. it out together. Let's mm-hmm. be a team. And, you know, teens and tweens need to learn these self-advocacy skills at a younger age. They need to be able to voice things for themselves. And so this questionnaire just helps get that process started.
Mm-hmm. And I think it really humanizes us as parents too. It, you know, when we're coming to our teens and we're saying, hey, I want to parent better, can you help me do that by going through these questions with me and helping me evaluate, you know, my parenting style? I think that can only be a positive thing.
Oh, I think it can be a wonderfully positive thing. I agree, because you're including them in the process and really including them in the parenting then as well. But it brings up a good question. Is this a book that you read as a parent by yourself and include your child or your teen or tween in occasionally? Or is this a book that you want parents and children to read together?
That's actually a great question. I mean, we wrote the book with the audience of parents of tweens and teens and, you know, and even college students in mind. It's really a book for parents. This is the Parent Compass. But there are anecdotes from lots of students we've worked with, you know, with many of the names changed, that parents can use. You know, there are going to be times when parents are reading this that they might say, hey, let me read you this, or, oh, does this sound like me? I mean, Jen and I, as parents, also don't preach that we do this perfectly. You know, we have made mistakes along the way too. Mm-hmm.
So important. We are all imperfect human beings, right? I'm constantly saying as well, Jen, Cindy, that I have not my perfect relationships, even though I'm a relationship expert. I mean, it's almost impossible, right? Now, one of the things you guys talk about in your book is the importance to eat dinner as a family and that technology should not be used at the dinner table. Can you explain a little bit more about your approach to that?
So the research tells us that frequent family dinners, the engagement in frequent family dinners, is correlated with less engagement in risk behaviors of teens. And interestingly, in surveys with teens, they do say that they really cherish that time with their parents. And having that time together is all about being present and being in the moment, sharing a meal together, and really conversing freely. So when we bring tech to the dinner table, we are interrupting that presence and that free communication. So in the Parent Compass, our viewpoint is to be leaving tech somewhere else and to be coming to the dinner table ready to chat. And we understand that this is, you know, coming to frequent family dinners is a difficult task, though also with COVID, I think that maybe is a side effect for some families, that family dinners were a bit more common. So if you're feeling that you have a difficult time conversing with your family, you can use things like table topics or questions that you can find them all over the internet, 100 questions to use during dinner. And you can ask questions that kind of dig deep into your students' days that go beyond how was school today or how did you do on that test.
And I think I would add also that family meals don't mean you all have to be sitting down on your bottoms around a table at the same time every night. That's difficult, even sometimes during COVID, to accomplish because of different schedules. But you can grab a family meal. Could be you and one of your kids having breakfast together. It could be an after school snack that you're sharing together and having a more meaningful conversation. But obviously, ideally, the more the merrier, and getting everyone around the table is great, but sometimes that's difficult to accomplish. So, you know, eating is a social activity, and it does slow you down and takes you off of other distractions. And it's just a great way to connect and engage. The Parent Compass also has a wonderful list of great questions that you can ask to engage with your teens as well.
I love that topic, by the way, Jen and Cindy. When I was a parent with young children, tweens, my kids are post-college now. We used to, at the dinner table, talk about the goods that happened in your day and the not so goods mm-hmm. that happened in your day. And that's how we started off at the dinner table. And so, you know, giving us questions and topics as parents to talk with our tweens and teens is so important and vital. And kids really like that time. So thank you. I think that's a great, great topic. Now, I also know, I can hear listeners saying, well, how do I know then if I'm too involved in my child's life? So can you explain, how would a parent understand that they need to have boundaries at some times, that your kids need to have privacy, that they can have a closed door to a bedroom? How do I know if I'm too involved as a parent?
Well, we explore that very question even before the parent questionnaire in the book, because basically we're asking parents to not be those terms like helicopter and snowplow and tiger parent, the terms that have been, you know, jumping around.
Explaining, and you'll have to explain those terms, parent, by the way, to everybody.
So yeah. So on page 10 and 11 of the Parent Compass, we sort of offer questions to help you determine if you are one of those kinds of parents crossing those lines. And again, this is something that doesn't happen all the time. And sometimes it just happens by accident and you realize the mistake you've made and you can correct. It's not like once you are this, you are always this. But, you know, if you are a parent that obviously hires lots of extra tutors and multiple subjects to help your teen, or if you are the parent that's waking your teen up every day for school, or if you are delivering, you know, homework and assignments that your teen may have forgotten, or if you're complaining to your teen's teachers or your teen's coaches about things, these are all behaviors that are indicating you are too much in their space and you're not allowing your teen to, you know, grow as a young adult and learn adulting skills that they're going to need. And the way that they can learn those is under the safety of the roof of your home. There are so many more positive ways that you can engage with your teens. And if you are praising, you know, their effort more than their outcome, if you're just bugging them about their grades and not necessarily talking about, wow, I know you worked really hard on that. It was great for me to see you, you know, struggling through that. And, you know, that's wonderful. Even, you know, regardless of how you do on this or whatever feedback you get from your teacher, I know what I saw, which was great effort. Or, you know, if your child brings you a problem, are you just jumping in to fix it? And if you're doing that, you're not restraining yourself enough. Instead of encouraging your teen to, you know, what kinds of things do you think would be good solutions to this? And, you know, do you just want me to listen? Do you want a hug? You know, what can I do to support you through this? Not just fix your problem. And so, you know, parents just, there are these gray areas and they're sometimes hard because we love our kids so fiercely that we want to make them feel better. We don't want them to hurt. We don't want them to suffer. And sometimes these mistakes and these failures and these struggles are the best things, the best gifts we can give our kids so that they can, you know, come out of those and learn how to be resilient from those. And we just can sit by their side as they go through some of these things, having them know you're there for them, but not jumping in to manage everything.
Mm-hmm. Not fixing the problem, so mm-hmm. to speak, and allowing them to figure out solutions and resolutions. I love those comments. Now, one of the things I get a lot from parents is the topic of jobs for teens and allowance. What are your views on whether or not it's important for teens to have jobs and on the topic of allowances?
Frankly, in my role as a college counselor, I wish that more of my students had jobs. Mm-hmm. I think that they teach the most valuable skills, from self-advocacy skills to responsibility and everything in between. And unfortunately, I don't see enough students who do go out and get those jobs. But so we talk about that in the Parent Compass. With regard to money, so we believe that that can impact a teen's motivation when they have sort of an extrinsic motivator. So our position is that, you know, ideally the kid understands what they are responsible for, but we don't particularly recommend paying a teen for chores.
Mm-hmm. So allowances then you would not agree with or suggest or encourage parents.
Well, I think there's kind of, again, it's a little bit case by case and family by family, but with the allowance factor, kids being able to learn to share and save and spend, that's kind of the main thing that's always sort of taught with when it comes to money. You know, sometimes a grandparent will, you know, give the child, you know, money for something, or sometimes the kids will be doing some chores that you want them to help you wash the car or whatever else it is. And there is some extra motivator in there, but I think we're talking more specifically also for, you know, grades, parents who are making mm-hmm. mistakes.
Absolutely.
Grades. In terms of jobs outside the home, I think they also just teach kids the value of a dollar. You know, when kids are used to just charging things on their Apple phone or taking money out of your wallet to go do something with their friends, they don't understand how many hours it took to earn that $20. And jobs don't have to be, you know, kids will say, oh, I'm too young, how can I get a job? They don't have to be at a storefront. These jobs can be getting your neighbor's mail and watering their plants and dog walking and bagging groceries and babysitting and, you know, organizing a little summer camp in your neighborhood or tutoring. You know, there's lots of age appropriate jobs that kids can start doing from a very, very young age.
And they can do them virtually as well. I can't tell you how many students I had this past summer who wanted to work or wanted to do something. Maybe it wasn't getting a job, but maybe it was something else. And they came up with something that they could do on their own and that they could do virtually. So I think that that piece has certainly grown thanks to COVID.
Such great comments. And the notion of virtual jobs, as well as jobs around your neighborhood, dog walking, you know, delivering papers, which we don't do very much of anymore, watering your neighbor's plants. Those are such important things that parents need to understand are possible to earn money.
Yeah.
Now, we only have 2 minutes left, Jen and Cindy, and there's so many more questions that I have. But if you just had one message that each of you want people to take away from today's program, what might that be?
I think my message would be, and Jen may say the same one, but we have a few. And I think this one has to do with really seeing and appreciating the teen that you have or the child that you have in front of you. And knowing that each child, you know, is unique in their interests and their abilities and their, you know, academic position, whatever you want to call it. But knowing that each of our kids is a teen or a tween, and it's their opportunity to be who they are, to do the things that are hard, but also to do things that they enjoy, that are their choice to do. And that we have to appreciate them as individuals, not as an extension or, you know, a trophy reflecting who we are, that we just have to appreciate them and see them, really see them.
So appreciating your unique tween, love that message.
I would say the same thing, frankly, but I would take it one step further in that I am a really big fan of tangible reminders, things that we can use that when we see them remind us to do something or to think a certain way. And one thing that we talk about in the book is this idea of earplugs. And I give my students a pair of earplugs when I start working with them. And the reason is I want them to stay their own course, to kind of, you know, stay away from the comparison game and to really take a good hard look at what makes them who they are and what makes them unique. And so I asked them to carry those earplugs around in their backpack or put them in their locker and just use them as a reminder when they see it. Okay, like I am special in who I am and I'm just going to stay the course. And so likewise.
I love that idea. I'm going to give my college students earplugs too as well. I love that. We are out of time, Jen and Cindy. Yes. I apologize. It has been a pleasure to talk with you today and so many vital and important topics in your book. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
And again, listeners, if you're interested in learning more about Cindy Muchnick, Jen Curtis, or their new book called The Parent Compass, please go to parentcompassbook.com. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help all your relationships, including the one with yourself, be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com, where I provide you with science-based relationship advice that's easy to understand and include in your life. So listeners, until next time, be safe, be healthy, and here's to your happy, healthy relationships.